They say that necessity is the mother of invention, and I became a business coach by accident, actually, a car accident specifically, because by the time I was healed and ready to work again, I had such a big medical bill. I was so financially wiped out that I knew I had to get really serious about making money in a way that I never had before. You know, I'd been, for 3 decades, I'd trained and facilitated personal professional growth, and it was all word of mouth, no marketing at all. And I loved my work so much, I really never even thought about money. I wasn't motivated primarily by money. People have different styles around money, and that was mine. So, but then I knew it was time for me to really get serious about making money and also to be comfortable with becoming visible. So I started studying marketing in a new paradigm way, which means not the pushy selling of the past, but rather a heart-based, respectful and mutual way of offering value and a co-creative way of discovering marketing for each person. And the surprise was that I enjoyed learning about marketing, and I wanted to share it with other people who are providing services that make the world a better place. So many healers never think about money. Also, they just love being with their clients. So I'm really glad that that it turned out that way. I kind of got tricked into it by the universe.
Yeah, the universe does that to us. That's true. But, you know, and I know it's hard for people, especially creative people and women, to market themselves and artists. And it's hard to, and you talked about having to stop, you know, become visible. That's, you know, part of that, allowing yourself to be visible, to share who you really are and what your gifts are.
Yes, that was a very, very big challenge for me. It's funny because when I'm teaching, when I'm in front of a group, I don't give a thought to myself. My focus is all on the content. But if I think about, used to be that I think about marketing, I think about, oh, but I don't want all this attention. You know, I realized I was sort of hiding out and I needed to heal that. So I got kind of a 2-for-1 here by learning how to be a marketing coach.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, and in your workshop, you're talking about the glass ceiling. So let's talk about that, what you mean by glass ceiling. And a ceiling sounds like, okay, and what's beyond that glass ceiling? I can picture people's dreams, like there's this big cloud of dreams above this ceiling and we're wanting to reach it. And how do we get, you know, how do we get past that glass ceiling? And we, you know, we've talked about it for decades about this glass ceiling for women.
It's true. It's true. And that's kind of how I look at it, too. I mean, I really do see this glass ceiling, which, oh, is about, you know, 8 feet by 8 feet. And if you go a little bit to the side, it's not there. It's not real. And beyond it are, you know, the dreams that we've had, some of us, our whole lives. I believe as children, a lot of us know what we're here for, what our gifts are. And it kind of gets stamped out of us by well-meaning adults who they think they're being practical and they don't intend to be stamping out our dreams. But between that and the cultural norms that are just left over from the past, that, well, the original term referred to limits on women in the workplace, that women can't own a business, a woman could never be the president, they can't take on certain jobs. And there's still some of that out there. And I think that women in the corporate world experience a lot more of that. Corporate or any large organization. But in my work, I work with solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, people who have their own business, who are doing some kind of service. And it refers more to any sense of limitation that feels real. And it's funny because even though I teach this, I've taught this for a long time now, when it comes up in my own life, I have to laugh at myself and say, but this limitation feels real. It feels real, you know. And I feel like I'm about 5 years old when I say that, right? So any limitation that feels real or absolute or permanent, or where people find themselves thinking, that's just the way it's always been. That's just the way it is. And beyond that, well, it's like in sports. You know, nobody can run a mile faster than a certain amount. And then when somebody breaks that limit, suddenly other people can break that limit. And so beyond the glass ceiling is anything that you feel drawn to that feels right for you, that feels like what you're built for, what you're made for. That was it Goethe that had the quote, that you have the capacity to fulfill what you dream of, and it may be enacted in a way that's different than what you think, but the capacity, the desire is leading you. The desire is there for a purpose, and it's to guide you in your decisions.
Yeah, like follow your dreams, you know, really hold on to your dreams and see where it takes you and which leads to, because what happens is those obstacles. So what kind of obstacles are in this glass ceiling or that stop people from going forward in that, creating that dream?
Okay, so mostly it's beliefs, whether they're conscious or unconscious. Sometimes people even know the belief that they have, and it still limits and controls them. But, for example, as a child, I remember somebody saying, a woman can't have a baby and a career. You know, once you start having a family, your life is over, and you're just a mom, and mom and a wife. And for the person who said that, it felt real and absolute and permanent. But now lots of women have gone beyond that. And once again, something that everybody thought was true, they found out, well, it's not really true. It just felt like it at that time. And it often comes down to, in my own life, I can remember, it often comes down to one person, one day, telling you no and telling you that something's impossible, usually at a young age, right? And in your innocence, you believe them. You think that it's true, and you forget to question it as time goes on. So I remember somebody telling me that I couldn't learn to play the drums. As a teenager, I already played guitar, and I wanted to learn drums. And she said, oh, no, you're not the type. You're not the type that's a drummer. And she was older and wiser, and I thought she knew what she was talking about. Oh, dear.
Yes, that sounds like, okay, well, you can't be a drummer because you wouldn't be perfect at it. You know, anybody can drum. You can, you know, hit your hand on a table and you're drumming, you know, thump, yeah, thump, thump. And to, yeah, to tell someone that you're not a drummer, that's like making it sound like, well, you couldn't be a professional drummer that is, and you never know that until you start, too.
That's right. And, you know, do you know how many times the Beatles were turned down by recording companies? Something like 42 recording companies rejected them. And so, you know, don't let somebody else tell you what's real for you, because they may be just speaking of their own experience, and it may not be true for you at all.
Yes, and I was just thinking that they're also looking through a lens, like they're projecting onto you what they think who you are, mm-hmm, which may have nothing to do with the reality of who you are.
Exactly. Yeah, and that kind of goes to the next thing. It's like I think that, you know, there are certain things that we have to unlearn. Sometimes it's not that we need to do more, try harder, be more, get better, that we need to let go of a lot of erroneous things that we heard or believed when we were little. And, you know, it comes down to trusting yourself more, listening inside more, because we're living in a world that is so different. Our parents did their best to prepare us for the world they were living in, which is long gone. It's such a thing of the past. And the world we're living in, we couldn't have even anticipated 10 or 20 years ago. So how could we be prepared for it? So one of the most valuable things we have to live our lives today and to follow our life purpose is our intuition and trusting ourselves. Well, why wouldn't we trust ourselves? Who else is going to know more about our lives and our real purpose and our dreams than we do? You know, what a sad loss that has been. And it's still in there in perfect condition. We can still get it back, every single one of us. And the way we get it back is by practicing, by making it a practice to listen to. A lot of times our body is giving us clues. I love working with the body as a metaphor. But just our intuition about, oh, gee, I'm going to drive home this other way today. I don't know why. It just feels right. To begin to listen to that in small things all the time, so where you trust it when it comes to big things, you'll know that you really can trust it.
So what you're talking about a little bit is how to create new pathways, which is, you know, mm-hmm, creating those neural pathways in our brain. And it's a good example. Just drive, you know, we get in our routine. We drive the same way to work every day, same way to the store. How about exploring and seeing a different part of the city, you know, going different ways? And that's a metaphor towards anything in your life. You know, that's a simple one about driving. But looking at any place where you are, you've created a habit that you always do things this way. And it then you kind of limit your creativity.
Yes. Yeah. I had an experience of that this morning. I usually walk in a certain place. I walk every day. And today I just felt like walking someplace different. And I am always looking for beautiful local sites where I can have live seminars. And I happened upon a new place that I didn't know existed. So that's a really nice byproduct. And some days, sometimes you won't know. Your instincts will tell you something, and you may not know for years why it was so important for you to follow your gut. I've had some very personal experiences of being guided to do or not do a certain thing for my health. And it didn't make any logical sense at the time, but my gut was unmistakable. Like, no, don't do this, do this other thing. But even in shopping, I was shopping one day, and I tried on a particular outfit that was on sale, and it was really pretty, and I really wanted it. I wanted it to work, and I looked in the mirror. I had it on. I looked in the mirror, and my head was just nodding, no, no. And I thought, boy, my body knows before my brain does. Mm-hmm. So just getting into the practice of listening to that guidance all the time.
Yes, it is about listening. And also, I want to talk about, you know, identifying those patterns that stop us. You know, we kind of sometimes have blinders on. Like you said, you know, you think this dress looks good, and the mirror shows you something else.
It was pretty funny.
Funny. But we do get blind to our patterns. And how do you help people identify those patterns?
Well, the first thing is always becoming aware. And it's different for different people, you know. What's a strong point for one person can be a weak point for the next person. And so it's really a discovery process, kind of a treasure hunt, I think of it. As I said, as a teenager, I wanted to be a rock star. I just absolutely did. Music was so important to me, and it always will be. But I just thought it would be so great to be a musician. And I was talking one day to a fellow who I met at a music workshop. And I didn't know anything about him. He was a complete stranger. And I said, yeah, even as a little kid, I wanted to be a musician. But of course, you know, musicians starve, and you can't make a living that way. And he was very serious and listening to me, and he said, yeah, I know. He said that I always heard that too, and so I'm not a musician either for that same reason. And I said, by the way, what do you do? And he said, oh, I'm an actor. And I said, wait a minute. Didn't anybody ever tell you that actors starve too and you can't make a living being an actor? I mean, I was in stitches. And he said, no, nobody ever told me that. I've always made my living as an actor. I make a really good living. And I just thought, well, there it is. You know, nobody killed his dream. I mean, as time went on, I realized I didn't really want the lifestyle of a rock star. But I thought it looked like a lot of fun. And but the point is that I was really discouraged from it, and he never was. And so he didn't know he wasn't supposed to be making a good living doing it. So he was.
So, what you don't know.
Yeah, what you don't know. The other thing that can really trip, especially women, is waiting for permission. And I don't think we even are aware of how much we're waiting for permission. We are waiting for somebody to tell us, yeah, that's a good idea. Go ahead. I can see you doing that. Or what if somebody said, yeah, how can I support you in looking into that? You know, and using the rock star analogy, what if somebody just said, well, why don't we get you backstage at some concerts and some rehearsals and give you a reality check and see, you know, is that really what you want? And if so, this is, you know, these are kind of the steps. This is what it takes. And I probably would have decided on my own, you know, this is not the lifestyle that I want. And for all of our dreams, somebody probably encouraged him along the way and said, oh, you want to be an actor? Well, you could take these acting classes, get started. And so if we wait for permission, if we wait for somebody else to understand our dreams, we'll wait a long time because they've got their own dreams and they're different. So and there's a big difference between waiting for permission, which is, you know, we unconsciously do that so much, versus consulting with trusted advisors, you know, like having a good coach, and then making an informed decision and taking prudent risks, right? Whether or not other people can see the value of it or not. You know, it took my husband quite a while to really understand my business. And what looked like really risky things to him would have been if he'd done them. But for me, they were just right. My gut was guiding me, and everything was lined up. I could just feel it. So it wasn't so risky. What's risky is to not listen to that. So another thing is to drop perfectionism. That's a huge obstacle. If you're feeling like you're stuck, right, check to see if the perfectionism paralysis is going on, because it will make you feel like you can't dare make a mistake. And we're all making mistakes all the time. It's part of life. You know, it's just not avoidable. And so you have to become friends with making mistakes. And one person who inspired me at one point was Richard Branson, who his company slogan was, "Screw it, let's do it." And he found that he could make a decision, make a mistake, fix the mistake, go on and make another mistake, fix that mistake, and proceed and get successful much faster than if he was stuck on the first decision for too long. And so it gave him the confidence to just like, well, let's see, let's find out.
Yeah, no, and just you have to play with it. If you can't wait till you think it's perfect in your mind and then step into it.
Yeah.
And that does stop us. And yeah, it's such a big thing about being perfect. And I'm thinking about the permission part of, that's what's so great at Woman of Wisdom, is that people hear, you get to speak about your dreams and people hear it and they go, oh, just like you were saying, how can I support that? Or I see you doing that. And we really need that. People need that. And so we need to put it out there and not be shy, you know, talk to people about what our dreams are and get the feedback. Get the support.
That is such, oh, that's so true. This is such a wonderful conference, and there's so much support there, and such a healthy, vibrant community of women who are all growing and questioning and searching and becoming more and more of themselves. That's a great, great example of that. You know, it's so important to surround yourself with people who are also growing and searching and questioning and taking prudent risks and discovering. People have all different. Last year, I talked about the sacred money archetypes, and everybody has different combination of archetypes that are their predominant tendencies. And understanding that has been so helpful to me, because some people's predominant tendency is to be cautious. And we need people like that in the world, because they balance out people who are kind of mavericks and huge risk takers. So not everybody wants the same thing. Not everybody functions in the same way. And it can be kind of exciting to watch how somebody who's a maverick lives their life. And, you know, they'll move to a different country without really thinking it through. And it may work out and it may not, and they're okay with that, and because they're built that way. And if they know they're built that way, it's okay. But if somebody who's more of a cautious type tried to do that, they would be so stressed out, it wouldn't fit. So just listening to the way we're made and being around a rich enough community that you see people functioning all different kinds of ways, their style, following their style, and honoring their own style as they create their life. And definitely you see that at the conference. I was so surprised last year, so pleasantly surprised, because I go to a lot of conferences, and it is so well organized and so rich, and the food is yummy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think about way back when, having some presenters tell me, like, they had to change their agenda because when we've been at it for many years, and even though new people come every year, but there's the old people that kind of hold the grounding of it. And they just dive in. And so, I mean, I had some of the, wow, I had to change my agenda because you guys were 10 steps ahead of me. You know, and that's true. It's like, we're ready to dive in. It's not slow. It's not like step by step by step and cautiously teaching people, thinking they're not going to get it. It's like, no, we're right there. Everybody's right there. And they just dive in. And that's something I've witnessed in that, that, you know, came up, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. Was aware of that.
Oh, that's so true. And I presented a lot of conferences. I teach workshops and present and travel. I'm going to be in China in 5 weeks and teaching over there. And it's going to be a whole other thing. And I may step in front of that audience and have to change what I had planned to present because there's, you know, huge cultural differences. But yeah,
right.
Last year at the Women of Wisdom Conference, I remember like being right in the middle of presenting and working with the group and just feeling like, I feel so joyful being here with these people. And they were so present. It was just this effortless flow. And it's not just any old group of folks.
Well, you're also a good presenter. I mean, we do love to bring great presenters, and we have a wealth of them in the Seattle area. So I thank you for that. So let's talk. Well, I wanted to mention, I had a conversation because you talked about waiting for permission. I have this image because I had a conversation with Holly Neer when she's a well-known feminist singer. And there's this idea of like waiting for permission is waiting for somebody to invite you up to the stage rather than taking the stage. And she agreed with that. It was kind of like, yeah, women have to take their stage. You don't wait for someone to say, you're ready now, I'm going to let you come up on the stage.
I love that. Oh my gosh, yes. And over the years, I have watched various people, performers, speakers. I have watched certain people's careers. I have watched them develop as a speaker or as a performer. And I remember Holly from years ago. She's really been inspiring to a lot of women. And I have seen people take the stage before they were ready, and they were terrible at first, but they kept doing it, and they got better and better. And one woman who's a very well-known teacher and mentor now, she said the first time I even presented myself publicly at all, I was practically in tears the whole night before, and only three people showed up, and one of them was my mother. She said, I cried before and I cried afterwards, and it was just terrible. And she said, but I kept going and I got better and I gave myself permission. So, yeah, we have to give ourselves permission. That's a new habit. It's a new habit. It's a new neural pathway in the brain, like you said. And it just all that whole constellation of listening to our intuition, trusting ourselves, taking a risk. And I have learned how to take the right size risk after making some, you know, sizable mistakes. I took some risks that were a little bigger than I should have, and it scared me. And I found out, you have to find out, like, okay, where is your growing edge? But it's all practice and experience. And you will get, I've seen the most terrible speakers become good speakers. They were not naturally gifted at all, and they were terrified. And you can hardly shut them up now. I mean, they're really, really loving it, right? They've turned into, I remember one woman in a class years ago, and I said, part of this class is going to be, we're going to work on your presentation. And each of you will get a chance to stand up in front of this very supportive, very safe class and do a very brief presentation that you have time to prepare. And then, you know, you'll get feedback and you'll grow your confidence. And this one woman just basically got up and left the room. And on the break, I found her and we talked and I said, look, we're going to make this really safe for you. But she just said, I've got to tell you, I'm so scared and I've never been supported like this before. And it was a 4-day intensive. And by the fourth day, she got up, she gave the most wonderful presentation. And then she emailed me later. She's in a different state, in California, a different physical state. And she emailed me and she said, look at my class list. Look at all the places I'm teaching now. And I'm loving it. And so, You know, all the people we see who are so good at what they're doing, we don't get to see them in their early phases when they're faltering and making mistakes and singing bad notes and all of that, or their costume is terrible. We just get to see the finished product. And so we compare ourselves to that, which is not very realistic. So, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's so true. I was thinking about that. I was in an award, say, different leaders were awarded, and I was one of them, and there was about a dozen of us, and someone spoke about how as mentors and leaders, we need to show our faults. We need to show our steps and mistakes along the way so that we're not just showing, especially young girls, that, oh, you can't do something until you're perfect, or you can't even do it at all unless you are perfect, that we need mm-hmm. to show the steps that we've taken along the way. That's being a true mentor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that we learn from other people's mistakes.
That's so true. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so making friends with mistakes and including them, like, okay, well, anytime somebody's a presenter, you know, and I train the people who are in my coaching group, I say, look, every time you speak, something's going to be a surprise. And it's not your fault. It's not anybody's fault. It's just sometimes there's equipment failures. Sometimes, oh gosh, one of my clients, in one of her early speeches, she was in what they called the green room, right, waiting for her time to come on and talk. And the person who was supposed to come and get her forgot to come and get her. So the audience was waiting, and she was sitting in the green room waiting. And she actually had one talk where everything went wrong that evening. They had equipment failure, everything. And I said, you know, let's reframe this. Let's look at how wonderful that you got such an efficient learning out of only one evening. You learned all these things, and so you know how to kind of build in a backup plan for all those things now. But you didn't do anything wrong. This was not a failure. This night was a great, great success. And I think it's a great success. I love what Holly said. Get on stage before you're ready. That's how you get ready. And that getting on stage, no matter what happens, is a great success.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're so afraid of our voices and afraid of what other people are going to think of us. And that judgment, that comparing ourselves, that is one of those obstacles of that stops us. Is where mm-hmm. you talk about, you know, that fear of being visible, and just learning to take risks and know that the audience is your friend. And setting that up, putting friends in the audience for you so that you have, you know, if you need that, you've got that safety valve of like, okay, I'm going to look at my friend over there and talk to her.
Oh, yeah. Having a friendly face to look out to is just wonderful, especially in the beginning. And to just know that they're holding you. The whole audience is really holding you. There are very few hostile audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, people show up because they want to be there and they want to hear what you're going to talk about. And that's in all of life. I mean, some of the people listening may not want to be speakers or teachers or performers, but it's everywhere in life. You know, you get a new job, you open a new business, your potential clients, they want you to succeed. They want you to do well. They want to see where you shine, right? Your clients, massage therapist, acupuncture, your clients want to see your expertise. They want to see you shine. And just kind of remembering that we get triggered back into grade school when we're standing up in front of the class doing a book report. And in the old days, some of us had supportive teachers and some of us had really critical teachers. And it was painful, right? And so we kind of get triggered back into that unless we've healed that, or unless we have, one way to heal it is to have more experiences of a supportive audience, a supportive boss, supportive coworkers, and also to just be in the habit of attracting supportive people, positive supportive people into your life across the board. And sometimes people just find that there are family members, there are people kind of built into their life that they need to minimize the contact with to the degree that they can because, you know, it's just not good for them. And this is It's a process. It's a process. We don't do these things overnight.
No, that's true. Yeah. I wanted to Oh, well, if there's something more you want to finish, because I might be changing topics. I don't want to change your thought if you're onto something.
Well, I just had to say, sometimes we have to be, this kind of goes along with asking permission, not pleasing people, not feeling like we need to please people, and that just because somebody's angry with us doesn't mean we've done anything wrong. I mean, there'll be times people will be disappointed. This is not just in business, but this is in any human relationship, which business is all about human relationships. Life is, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. But just because somebody's angry doesn't mean you've done anything wrong, and it doesn't mean they're right. You know, I notice this in myself too. Just because I'm upset with a situation doesn't mean I'm right. Right? It just means I'm upset for some reason, and to look into that and kind of diffuse that. But I forget where I was going with that. But it was along with trusting yourself, permission, and yeah, pleasing, people pleasing. You have to kind of let go with that. I had a very difficult but really valuable learning one time where I was in, it was actually a family situation, where there was a member of the family who was not in a good place, who said some really harsh things. And I just, in the moment, I'm thankful for the inspiration that I just said to her, you know, it's really not okay with me for you to talk to me that way. And then that's it. I just stopped talking, and I decided that it was going to be okay with me whatever happened next. I just needed to say that, and that it was going to be okay if she got angry, or if it ruined the whole evening, or if other people knew about. I just had to, like, you know, this is really not okay. And I wasn't upset. I stayed grounded. And nobody had ever set a boundary with her like that before. And it never happened again. So that was just grace that in that moment I had that insight to that I didn't need to please her or be worried about having her angry with me. That was okay.
Yes, and it's a learning how to set boundaries and be do it's kind of like effective confrontation with kindness. Yeah, so that was and was a lesson for her. It was a lesson for you too of learning how to do that, like of you know, taking that risk and how do you do this correctly? Because sometimes we do that really it's a you know, it can be kind of a mess and you did it with grace and learning how to do that. And that's another thing of practice of we learn how to do things as we learn as we see people respond to us too. We go, oh, okay, that didn't go over as well as I wanted. What can I do differently?
Right. Yeah, right. And keep
So
learning.
what are the most, yeah, we're always learning. What are the most worthwhile investments of time or resources for women to optimize their creative expression?
The first thing that comes to mind is for each woman to know what her creative expression is. You know, and I think, as you mentioned previously, as we've been taught, some of us, that if you're not the best, you can't do it at all. And as a kid, I enjoyed singing and dancing, and we did, you know, pretend theater as little kids, and painting and drawing and all these things, and gardening. How can I leave out gardening? Just being in nature, and all of these things feed your soul. They feed your soul purpose, even if they're not directly related. And so number one is always be in touch with what restores you. What are the things in your life that feed you? And keep those sacred. Keep those protected and make sure they get in your schedule. When I lived in California, it was the best. It was the best in terms of I had a spot on my college campus that was out of the flow of traffic. Kind of nobody ever walked there. But it was in a corner between two buildings where the sun was, and I could sit on the ground. So I was grounding, being in the sun, and it's quiet, and it was overlooking a beautiful canyon. And I wrote it into my schedule. Every Wednesday morning, I was there for 2 hours. And it just grounded my whole week and fed me. And now living in Washington where it's wet and cold outside, it's a little trickier to find good spots. But to find whatever that is for you, and also just in general, to let yourself continuously discover what you really want. another thing that I think we've inadvertently been taught is to not know what you want. Don't know what you want. That can be revived. It's in there in mint condition, but we have gotten out of the practice of letting ourselves know what we want. I grew up in a large family, and so there just wasn't much money to work with. And we, without meaning to, my parents kind of inadvertently taught us, don't even know what you want because we can't afford it. And it took me a long time to even be aware that I had taught myself to not know what I wanted. But inside, you know, start listening to that little small voice and start remembering, like, oh, yeah, I like to sing and dance and play and be in the garden and make music. And I love teaching. I love sharing information. So, but each person's going to have a different palette, like a color palette of these items that feed them. So it's an ongoing practice your whole life. Some people don't discover that they love to paint until they're 80 or 90. What, Grandma Moses, I don't think, started painting until she was 90 or something like that. And to just continue to move your life kind of slowly, but continuously, more and more in that direction. It's a slow process. It's not this dramatic, I would love if it was like in the movies, right? The elves come out and suddenly there's a miracle. And I mean, that can happen sometimes, but more often it's a gradual process of taking a class or making a new friend or finding a place to sit. One of my favorite things is to get a chair and put it in front of a window where you can look out and see the sky and the trees and the wind. There's something about that that just does a beautiful recalibration in the human soul. You know, and I remember men for decades seem to innately know that daddy's got to have the chair, right? I don't know if your dad had a chair, but my dad did. And nobody else ever sat. Nobody ever said we couldn't sit there, but it was his chair. And he would come home from work and sit in his chair and kind of turn into a more relaxed person every day. It was just innate wisdom or something. And I realized I need a chair like that as well.
That's interesting. I want to go back to this idea of you don't know what, I mean, it's part of this, don't know what you hear that a lot. Women will say, well, I don't know what I want. Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is take some steps, like just choose to do something and see how it feels. It's really, really goes down to how does it feel inside? And you have to explore. And I think some of it is going back. You mentioned, you know, like you'd like to sing and dance as a kid. What did you love to do as a kid? And sometimes we sort of block that out and we have amnesia. We just, I don't know what I liked as a kid, but well, then just explore, you know, but touch into that child within you and see what it is that, because it could be one of your steps or clues to find out what you want in your life.
Oh, yes, Chris. Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe it's in there. And I think kids know a lot more. I remember being 3 years old when I knew I was a musician. I heard my big brothers playing music, and I just remember the little voice in my head saying, I can do that too. I know how to do that too. That's one of my things. And I just knew, and didn't share it, didn't tell anybody, and didn't do anything about it until I got to college, actually. But yeah, it takes exploring, and it's going to come out of small things.
That's true.
Again, it's not the Walt Disney version generally, although it can be, and that's great when that happens. But yeah, the explore and the taking steps. People don't take steps because they don't feel ready, and what they don't realize is that's how you get ready, is by taking steps.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, so we're talking about, you know, getting beyond the glass ceiling. That this is your workshop, and so you're going to be diving into this in the workshop. And I'm thinking of. And you said something about listening to that voice. You know, as a kid, you were 3 years old and you heard that voice inside you that you wanted to, you know, you loved music, wanted to do music. I remember sitting in Unity Church when I first started going there, and I'm seeing the program director walk down the aisle, and this voice comes to my head like, I'm going to do that someday.
I
don't know where
the
voice came. And it did happen. And, you know, but here's this voice. It's this inner voice that speaks to you, and it's like, listen, you know, having the And so having that moment of sitting in a chair, looking out at the world, looking out at trees and seeing the trees blow in the wind and all that, those are the moments where you calm yourself down and get still so that you can be open to hearing those voices.
Oh, such a good point. If we're really tired, if we're really tired or really busy, or there's a lot of chaos and noise in our lives, we won't be as likely to hear the clues and hear the body clues. You know, our body has so much wisdom in it, more, you know, as much as the brain. I have a lot of training in brain rewiring as well. And this culture that we're in now is very left brain culture. And our whole education system is really geared towards the left brain. And even our approach to the arts, it depends on the school you're in, right? But even our approach to the arts is fairly left-brained. And the way everything is set up is that we're wasting our whole right brain. We're wasting our body wisdom, a lot of different parts of the brain as well, without getting too much into that. But our body is constantly giving us yeses and nos that we kind of aren't used to listening to, right? And that's something else that people can start to do right away, is to listen to what is your body yes and no feel like. And for some people, a yes is kind of like the body expands a little bit, like, oh, yeah. Or the body contracts or pulls back or pulls away. So if somebody... I'm just going to say, somebody asks you out on a date and your body contracts, but your brain goes, I haven't been on a date for a long time and it would be really fun. Listen to your body, because your body knows stuff your brain doesn't know yet. And or if something feels, I don't know, just use it all the time, because it will really guide you unerringly. Once you learn to listen to it, I wish I could think on the spot of so many more examples of that. But you might also just lean forward when your body is giving you a yes, go ahead, or lean back when your body's saying no, get me out of here.
Thanks, Rose, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Chris.